Indie musician Damon Krukowski had a front row seat for the transition from analog to digital culture. Back in the 80s, he was a founding member of the indie band Galaxy 500. And today, he's one half of the folk rock duo Damon and Naomi. Lately, he's been thinking about something most musicians and music listeners take for granted, and that's headphones. What happens when most of the listening we do takes place inside our heads? Damon explores the question in a book called The New Analog, Listening and Reconnecting in a Digital World. Doug Gordon sat down to talk with him and find out more.
Damon, your book is called The New Analog, which sounds like a contradiction in terms, since analog is usually considered old school. And when we think of new, we tend to think of digital. Why did you decide to call it The New Analog?
Yeah, I agree. There is a contradiction in the title. Another idea that I was toying with, which could have gone into the title, but it sounds less attractive, I guess, is post-digital, which is a similarly counterintuitive way of thinking of this. But the idea that analog is only old and digital is only new is something that I wanted to confront in the book and challenge. And I think the book, in the end, explodes that. It's not an anti-digital technology book or an anti-new technology book, but I am trying to look at what are the real terms of this switch that we're all living through right now from analog to digital communications. It can't just be old and new, because that's happening always. There's always older and newer things, and digital is, sure, there are all these gadgets. We're all immersed in this world of digital gadgetry right now. But there's something else that's more fundamental, I think, that's going on in the switch of our communications. And that's what I wanted to try and put my finger on in the book.
You say that Pink Floyd's classic 1973 album, The Dark Side of the Moon, is the ultimate headphone album. Why?
Right. Well, it kind of invented that stereotype, and it's a very male-oriented stereotype, I think, of the teenage boy in his bedroom, and I was one of them, with the headphones on, listening to Dark Side of the Moon. And that's kind of an archetype that was kind of invented in the early 70s and has never really left us as a certain type of way of listening to music. What I point out in the book is that Dark Side of the Moon was very deliberately mixed in stereo for a very particular effect, which was spatial effects that they could bring into the mix by assuming that you were listening on headphones, which means you have one channel in one ear and one channel in the other, like you've put your head between the speakers. And then they can move sounds between the left and the right, and it has the illusion of sounds moving around your head. And this is what was so exciting, of course, as a 13-year-old boy, and is still exciting to people in some ways. What I point out in the book is that particular idea of how to manipulate sound and space through people wearing headphones has its place, obviously. But is it really the way we want to be listening to everything? Is it really the way you want to be listening, to your public radio show and to all the music that's being produced today? There are many different types of music, and that sort of spatial effect is actually really not very useful for many of them.
You have this great passage where you talk about how the album opens. Can you kind of walk us through the first side of Dark Side of the Moon?
The first track, which starts with a heartbeat. I mean, I find that so striking because that's not a sound that you hear in the world. It's a sound that you hear in your head. And to me, it's a very strong statement about where this record is going to exist in your world. It's going to exist in your head. And when you put on headphones, I think you have this very inside feeling. You're not listening to sound out in the world like we do when we're just walking down the street or when you hear music coming out of a doorway. You're putting it inside your own head.
Yeah, you're creating your own world. I always think of the Crowded House song Private Universe, because when you put headphones on, that's what you're doing, creating your own private universe.
Yes, and you're not sharing it either. So it's sound that's not shared, just like the sound of your own heartbeat. So that gesture is really carried through, I think, on that record, and it's indicative of what headphones do and what they're powerful for. They're powerful for making a private world like that, for making a kind of an anechoic chamber where you're shut off from the sounds of the world, and you may even be shut off from certain types of sound that music make. for example, the sounds of a room, of instruments in a room. What I found in investigating this question about headphones, which was really just sparked by looking around me and thinking how many people were walking around with headphones in, the way I sat in my room when I was 13 years old, and thinking about what people were hearing now more commonly. And one of the things I found is that audio engineers and psychologists who study the psychology of sound, sociology of sound, have studied how people perceive sound in headphones differently than when they're hearing sound out in the world. And the difference is you don't feel that any sound is coming at you from straight ahead when you're wearing headphones. And this is a very strange phenomenon, but if you think about it, or if you're wearing headphones right now, you can test it out for yourself. Sounds can come from the left channel, the right channel. They can come from all kinds of space, sense of space around you in the feeling of space that's been created by this separation. But you'll never hear a sound that seems like it's coming from directly in front
of you. This is what you call the blind spot, isn't it?
Yes, there's a blind spot on headphones. And the blind spot is precisely the direction you're facing. So if you're walking down the street wearing headphones, you're hearing sound in your head, and none of it seems to be coming from the direction you're walking. Now, that's a very peculiar situation.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Just in terms of putting everybody, if you're going to say, well, let's have this thought experiment where we're going to have everybody driving and walking and sitting on trains in the world, and no one's going to have a sense of any sounds that are coming directly at them from the direction that they're moving. That's a very strange idea.
It is, yeah.
And yet, that's exactly where we are. If you take your headphones off and you listen to sound in the world around you, this is the difference, and this is why sound is very clearly some of it coming from in front of you, which is that each sound in the space that you're in, you're hearing with both your ears, and you're hearing it differently between each of your ears because your ears are on either side of your head, and so any sound reaches them at a slightly different time and different feeling, different timbre, depending on where you are, the space.
Yeah.
Our brains sum that together. They measure the difference between the two ears and use that information to locate the sound in space. So that's what's happening on headphones, and that's why we lose our natural sense of location, locational listening, when we're wearing headphones. What if we could just have music everywhere? I mean, I'm a musician. I listen to music constantly. I love music. Isn't that a utopia? I can carry so many records with me now just on my iPhone, just MP3s. I just carry a set of headphones around, and there I am. It's like, okay, that's amazing. But at the same time, isn't it strange that what comes with that is this loss of a sense of where we are in terms of how we hear? We use sound to locate ourselves in space. That's a natural analog sense of our own. But headphones get in the way of it. They quite literally.
Yeah. You say that as our signals are increasingly taken up and used for profit by others, noise may be all we have left to call our own. And you argue that noise has value. What do you mean?
Well, I think that in digital media and in computers have this enormous power to separate what engineers call signal from what they call noise. And what that means in simple terms is you have information that you want to get a hold of. Say you're looking for something on Google. The digital system can put your finger on that so fast. It does that so quickly by eliminating everything that you weren't looking for, which is really the noise. So the people who engineered that software thought, how do I get the signal that this person wants as quickly to them as possible? And that's how that system works so efficiently. Now, along the way, they cut out everything that they decided you did not want to see. And that is noise. Now, here's the thing. Noise can communicate a lot. Say I'm trying to say something intimate to you. I might introduce more noise to my voice. I might whisper. I might try and put something that's not just my words into the sound of my voice. Now, the digital engineer will look at those extra sounds and say, you know, those aren't communicating the message here that's trying to be said, the language, the words. So I'm going to eliminate them. And that's what happens on your cell phone, for example. That's why you can use your cell phone in your car, which is a very noisy environment with all kinds of white noise around you, because the cell phone engineers have figured out how to isolate the signal of your voice, just the words you want to communicate, without all the noise. Now, that meant all the white noise of the car, but it also meant the tone of your voice, how you're saying that. And so what I'm trying to point out in the book is that that noise may have a lot of information also that we need. And just to let all the digital signals come through loud and clear is a great achievement, but where's all the noise? And where's all the information that that noise communicates? And that's, I think, something we need to look at again before we go another step in Moore's Law.
Damon Krukowski is a musician and the author of The New Analog, Listening and Reconnecting in a Digital World. He talked with Doug Gordon.